everyone, coming to you from our quarantined homes. But before the show, we have a fun thing to talk about. What's going on, Matt?
As many know, you and I have a lot of opinions, and for a long time they've been bottled up, but we're releasing them, and we are releasing them in a wine, in a beautiful rosé, and we want you guys to taste it with us, so join us for a virtual tasting.
Well, yeah, we made the wine with our friends over at Botanist and Barrel, and actually, Lyndon and Amy jumped on a call with us to tell us what it was all about. So, Lyndon, tell us about the wine.
Yeah, so we're putting together our first releases. So the wine we made with you all, which is a rosé blend of Mourvèdre, Traminette, and Merlot, all from Yadkin Valley in North Carolina. This has got a really cool label that you guys had custom made. It's called Bottled Up Opinions. And then we got two more wines that are going to be part of our first release. And one of them is a Pink Nat Pinot Grigio. And then the third one is a Mourvèdre Piquette that we're really excited about. Which is a sessionable wine that's a little lower ABV.
So you're releasing three wines all at once, and we decided to all kind of get together for a virtual tasting on May 28th, which is a Thursday, which is also the day we drop new episodes. So if you're listening right now, it's coming up. So check the link in our show notes. You can check all of our social media for how to get it, but it would be awesome if everyone wanted to buy some wine in advance and we can have it all shipped to your house. How do we go about doing that?
So there's two ways. If you're in the state of North Carolina, we want you to just go to our website, which is botanistandbarrel.com. There'll be a link right there on the homepage. We offer home delivery within the Triangle, so Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill region. If you are outside of that region or out of the state, you're going to want to go to vinoshipper.com and just search for Botanist and Barrel Cidery and Winery.
Normally, we would be doing a huge gala ball for the release of our first wines, but because we are quarantined and sheltering in place, we're doing a virtual tasting. So what we'd love is for everybody to taste it with us, grab bottles from Botanist and Barrel, and then we're all going to open our bottles together on the Zoom virtual call on May 28th at 7 o'clock, and we can all taste it together and tell you the story of the wines.
Got it.
So if you want to be a part of the virtual tasting, it's going to happen on Thursday, May 28th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can click the link in the show notes of this show, but also look for all of the links in our Instagram and Facebook posts. Again, it's May 28th at 7 p.m.
It's going to be fun, but it's going to be more fun if you get some wine and join us. Make yourself some food and join along with us, and you'll eat and drink very merrily.
Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast, coming to you from the cozy comforts of our palatial homes. I'm Max's next-door neighbor, Brian Hoyle, and your host for the evening. They're here, your busy backyard bartenders, the masters of the takeout menu, the homeschooling, home distancing, Max Trujillo and Matthew Weiss.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. I am your co-host, Max Trujillo.
And I am your co-host, Matthew Weiss. And today, we are talking about hydroponics. Yes, and for all of you who think of that as a nefarious thing, we're talking salad and lettuce here. Aww. And we are talking with the owner, creator, founder, one of them, of Blue Thumb Farms out there in Zebulon, North Carolina, Miss Mary Cove. Welcome, Mary.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, so out in Zebulon, we haven't spoken to too many people in Zebulon. So for one, give our listeners a perspective of where that actually is.
Sure. We are a couple towns east of Raleigh. Allison and I both met, at the time we were both living in downtown Raleigh. And in order to find land that was suitable for our greenhouse, we were searching around Raleigh, and we're just 30 minutes east, Max, of downtown Raleigh.
Max, everybody knows Zebulon. Your former butler bought a house in Zebulon.
Oh yeah.
And you have the Mudcats?
Yeah, we're right by that stadium.
Yeah. I think Keeley likes to be referred to as Keeley Mother Wagner, as she introduced all of our happy hour segments, which was ridiculous. So NC State, that's where it all got started. At least that's where, is that where the two of you met? Because this is a two-woman job, is that right?
Yep. We met in, we were both pursuing our master's degrees. Allison was running the aquaponic research facility. It's called the Fish Barn at NC State. And we were both studying wildlife biology. My degree was focused on tilapia, which are commonly raised in aquaculture. So that brought us together working at the Fish Barn, and we became fast friends. And as soon as we graduated, we just decided to dive into the hydroponic side of what we had both learned about.
How does one get into fish farming and growing tilapia, et cetera?
Yes, my degree was in wildlife biology. So I was studying invasive tilapia, which have been accidentally introduced or on purpose introduced to some of the power plant reservoirs in North Carolina. So I was studying the impact of the invasive tilapia on the native fishes. And Allison was actually separately studying some different water chemistry and the impact on trees, specifically of aquaculture runoff, that brought us to the commercial side of fish production and learning about it in an aquaponic environment. It was just like a weird thing. Both our degrees brought us there, even though it wasn't the original intent.
Controversial question, though. I have to ask, Mary, between you and Allison, who had the higher GPA?
It wouldn't surprise me if Allison did,
yeah.
But we're both hard workers, but I've never specifically asked her.
That's what she said. She texted us.
You guys have never talked about that?
No, so much of your master's degree isn't based, it was based on our defense and our thesis ultimately. So I'm not sure right. about both of our grades. She graduated before me, but.
Okay. Oh, got the leg up.
No, but yeah.
When you were studying to grow these fish, you were these were for feeding other aquaculture. Is that right? Or these were like commercially fished to be sold in markets, etc.
Yeah. So the facility that we both worked at is for NC State to study different techniques of aquaponics, which is a fish side that provides nutrients to a food side. So right now we only do the hydroponics in our business, which is just growing the vegetables. When you add the aquaponic part, it's when you're using the waste from the fish to provide the nutrients. So we got to learn about both sides of it at this facility. That facility was researching different species of fish and different technologies and pieces of equipment for providing information for the people who do commercially grow fish. It's not a for-profit or for-production facility. It's a research facility.
Gotcha. Because I was just getting politically correct as our friends from Local Seafood were probably just about to turn off the switch on our podcast and be like, wait a second.
If you're in Durham, I think Pompieri Pizza does kind of an aquaponic environment, like that type of environment. Uh-huh.
So they grow stuff under there.
They grow, but they have fish. They have everything kind of all set up to create their own environment at the restaurant, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I just wrote that down. I'll have to look into that. That's really neat. Yeah, it's a lot of people, you can do it in your garage or even on your kitchen counter with a fish tank. So you can do it at a really small scale for your family if you want. But we took it big and we don't have the fish here. We're just doing the veggie side.
Yeah. So speaking of big, you guys in Zebulon have 14 acres or 12,000 square feet of hydroponically grown lettuce.
Yes. So the facility that we built is 12 or 14,000 square feet. We do care about land, energy, and water conservation here. So we bought 14 acres and we plan to build upon our greenhouse as our business grows, but we love that we get to conserve all of the land around the greenhouse. So we're hoping to leave the majority of it untouched and just protect the land.
And protecting the land, meaning like you don't touch anything else around there, or you're just using sustainable resources? What does that mean to like protect the land around it?
Well, so we're in, a lot of our land is wooded, and we just bush hog and mow a small perimeter around our facility. But the objective is to have the smallest footprint possible, maximum production in a small footprint. So, I mean, we have a driveway and a little office, but the percentage of our land that we actually use is tiny compared to the land that we bought.
Cool. And the stuff that you bring in, so it's interesting, your business model, because you are locally grown. This is happening, like we said, in Zebulon. But you're bringing in plants from California, I think it is, to then grow in there? Or yeah, how does that work?
We grow everything from seed to salad is all happening here. So we do buy, our seeds, I think, come from Maine. We buy from Johnny Seeds. We really like working with them. But yeah, so we get the seeds, the soil, and nutrients for our water. But other than that, everything happens here, and we just deliver locally.
Max, new expression in the culinary world, seed to salad.
Seed to salad. I love it. I mean, it's pretty amazing. So growing hydroponically, we all need to know a little bit more about this, because everyone knows to throw some seeds into some soil. And in fact, my daughter, being homeschooled yesterday, we learned that when you put a seed in, we had to learn like how far down in the soil does a seed need to go. And it was something like only like a 16th of an inch or something. Like it was way less than I thought, even in that sense. Listeners, you obviously know I know nothing about farming when I'm talking about this at all. But this whole idea of being hydroponically grown, and Matt kidded around earlier, kind of alluding to the whole like marijuana side of things, hydroponically grown. To be honest, the only time I've ever really seen a hydroponic farm was in some dude's closet in Santa Monica, because he was growing weed. And that was like 15 years ago, and it was super fascinating. But explain to us what hydroponics is and why it's useful, and how is it different, let's say, than just typical soil farming?
Sure. So we, what you're talking about is traditional terrestrial farming, and we are using a more modern approach. It's more sustainable, particularly with growing lettuces like we grow. So all the publications say it's somewhere between 85 and 95% less water is used to produce the product that we grow than the same product that is grown on land traditionally. And, you know, you guys, I'm sure, have heard all about the food safety risks that come with some of these giant salad farms in Arizona and California, which is most of where the romaine and other spring mixes come from. So the things like E. coli, that comes from spraying water on the salad grown terrestrially with contaminated water. But our environment is super clean. It all happens inside. The plants don't have anything sprayed on them from the top. So they're not touched at all until they're being put into the clamshell on the way to the grocery store. Our facility is two giant ponds that are like 200 feet by 30 feet. And they're about 12 inches deep, and it's just all this water is recirculating through our system. So we waste very little water. The majority of our water usage is just from the plants absorbing it through their roots. So the water is filtered and ozonated and chilled or heated depending on what time of year it is. And all it is the plants floating on styrofoam rafts, and they grow on top of the raft, and their roots are in the water that we add nutrients to. And we have a quick turnaround, and we can grow all year round, unlike terrestrial farming.
And so how does that affect, say, just flavor in general? Is there an affecting flavor difference?
Sure. So because we're local and our stuff is hitting the shelves 24 hours after we harvest in most cases. So you have access to a super fresh product, whereas when you get stuff that is shipped from California or from different places, it's often 4 or 5 days old before it can even get to you. So we are often told that it's fresher. It's obviously more nutrient dense because it's fresher. But we haven't done a side-by-side taste test.
Ever?
Well, no, I mean, like, I haven't ever been able to taste California produce that's as fresh as mine.
Oh, so, gotcha.
But I know that everyone who's buying our product is getting stuff that's younger, fresher, more nutrient dense than the same thing from California because it had to travel here.
So, Mary, why has there always been sort of like a negative connotation, I guess, with, you know, if people are buying tomatoes and if somebody says, oh, those are hothouse tomatoes, you know, or they're grown indoors, and it seems to be like with kind of a nose in the air, negative, like I said, negative connotation. Where does that where and why does that come from?
I have only heard that referring to it coming from greenhouses that are in other countries. I know there's a lot of tomatoes that come from Canada and Mexico. So I've only heard that as an argument for trying to buy local stuff instead of from far away. I mean, some people are a little intimidated. It feels a little unnatural, but once you explain the sustainable side and the food safety side, you know, we have a really intense food safety certification and we have strict guidelines that we follow. But you have to think about what, like in a field of any crop that's grown terrestrially, you have to think about all the animals that can walk through there and the people who have to go in there to handle it, to harvest it, or the machinery that you need to do it for you. Because we're a small business with a greenhouse and we have a lot of control over it, we can handle it more safely.
I want to ask you all the different types of lettuces you're growing and the variables that you have there. But first, I want to take a quick break. If you own a restaurant and you're looking for mobile and online ordering, you can give eHungry a try. They work with thousands of restaurants and charge ridiculously low fees. So let your customers order online for carryout, delivery, catering, and more. You can get free setup and a 60-day free trial by visiting eHungry.com/NCFB. So right now, takeout is king, and things that we need most is to be able to get our food safely, order it easily online. eHungry.com will help you do that. So go to eHungry.com/NCFB. Mary, I do want to ask you, so with all the different types of lettuce that you grow, like you've got your spinach, you got your romaine, you've got your iceberg, I guess, you get your arugula, do you treat them differently? Do they grow differently? Are ones harder to grow than others? Like Matt and I come from a wine background, so you know, different varietals of grapes are super challenging to grow as opposed to others. So I'd like to know that in the world of hydroponic lettuce growing, what does that mean and where are your challenges in that?
Sure. So everyone wants spinach and we have been trying to grow. It's incredibly challenging to grow hydroponically. It needs so much light. It's so delicate. We have finally mastered growing it and it's something that we will only be able to offer for the summer season. So just because it needs so much light, you can't compete with growing it in the winter because of the natural sunlight, even though we do have artificial lighting. So that one is a challenge to grow and we're excited to be able to grow it this season. A few people are already buying it because we just released it.
I saw that. Yeah.
Basil is also a challenge to grow. So we are still working on that. And hopefully in the next like 4 to 6 weeks, we'll be able to launch that. Those are our two tricky ones that we wanted to make sure we waited until we really got everything else completely perfected. But arugula grows quickly. And that is a big hit. Everyone loves arugula. And with the arugula shortage because of the cold temperatures in California and Florida, we were able to pick up some new customers to fulfill those orders. So that was exciting. And we got to swoop in and be the hero to the local restaurants that couldn't get arugula otherwise.
I am a huge fan of the arugula. That is my favorite lettuce. Matt, what say you?
Oh, nice.
I was just going to say the same thing. I'm a huge fan of arugula. I mean, kale is obviously king of health concern and nutrients. So you kind of try to stomach it. But we all know that like it takes a lot of work to make kale taste good. But arugula is like naturally spicy and flavorful. So
yeah.
I'm with you.
Kale sucks. Come on.
Yeah, I agree.
Kale's a pain in the ass.
You know,
like, come on.
To tell you the truth, so because we grow all of our baby greens pesticide free, kale is very hard to grow because it's the most vulnerable. It's the most exciting for a couple of pests. And so we have a really proactive pest management plan that is pesticide free. So it is the hardest to grow kale because any bugs are just drawn to it. And even though we're in a greenhouse, you know, if a moth or a butterfly gets in, it just goes for that kale. So we have to really proactively control it with parasitic insects that control those that get in. Go ahead.
Oh, so regarding kale, though, it's interesting. I was in Nashville when we did the Something Else About Food podcast, and we spoke with, I don't know if you are familiar with the barefoot farmer that's out there. He's kind of a wild man, a long, crazy, dreaded beard, and he doesn't wear shoes, as the name would imply, but he does all sustainable, amazing, natural biodynamic farming, and we picked kale out of his, you know, soiled farm out there, and it was the first and only time I've ever had kale where I was like, oh, I understand what the flavor is of this now. Like it's not weeded behind all of like the waxiness and it's almost like really tannic, right? Like kale has like that really intense tannin on its leaf. Mm-hmm. But when I tried it the way he was growing it in a very natural form, it was like, oh, the flavor of kale exploded. And I actually understood it and really enjoyed it. But that was one time in a very specific place. So I don't know, maybe there are ways to effectively grow kale to where it's like actually delicious. And I know there's so many people listening right now going, come on, man, kale's great. But
yeah.
But be honest, you have to manipulate kale a lot to get to the point to where it's delicious.
Yeah, the beauty of what we grow, you know, you guys both like arugula and I'm with you on the kale, but we do grow the baby varieties, which it have a milder taste. So the arugula is not as spicy and bitter as some of the bigger varieties. And then same with the kale. It's a little softer tasting than some of that harsh kale that you have to massage and cover in Caesar dressing to eat.
Wait, and I also want to know, why is spinach so hard to grow and why is it so popular? Is it Popeye still or what?
I think it's because it's much easier to grow in California. But here, you know, they need ideal, perfect temperature. They like the cooler weather a little bit better. It's too hard to grow when it gets too hot. And they're very sensitive to certain diseases. And when you're, we're trying to do this as safely as possible. We don't want to use sprays, pesticides, or anything that we don't have to use. So we rely on our ozonation system to prevent disease. But spinach is notorious for being susceptible to Pythium. And so I think that's what a lot of people struggle with.
So let's talk a little bit about present day and what's happening now with like the quarantine happening, the virus and all. Of course, you know, you're in a field where you were serving to the community on a large scale. And so I would like to know a little bit more about where your business was pre-quarantine, pre-virus, and where it is now, and any of the struggles you've had to endure and any pivots that you've had to make in your business at this point. How has that been going for you?
It's everything is a bummer. To start with the bummer side, specifically the restaurants and universities that we were selling to wholesale through a distributor. Obviously, those sales have totally ended temporarily, and we hope that they will be able to open back up as soon as possible. But we were providing for a few universities and some restaurants and nursing homes that were buying in big bulk. And then the grocery store sales have stayed consistent. And then if anything, they've gone up a little bit. But the biggest thing for us that's a total change is that's been good for our business is the number of people who are signing up for produce delivery services. And we're in a couple of those locally in the Raleigh area. So Hungry Harvest, Produce Box, and then there's a few CSAs that we're a part of. And those sales have really gone up because people don't want to go to the grocery store. So that's been something that's good for us, is that we've been able to increase the number of homes that we end up in through these services.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's such a great part. I mean, we all know that, like, getting a CSA is a really smart way to go for your family. I mean, and then it's also kind of hassle free, especially if it's being delivered to you. There have been reasons like why or why not you know want to join up with a CSA. I mean, for one, if you're having to like drive there and you have to get it, and then you don't know what you're going to get. But I think, as someone that likes to cook like me, I look at like it's almost like a challenge or inspiration when you get this like box full of things you didn't know you're going to get or so. But we know Hungry Harvest. They've been a sponsor in the past. They're good friends, and they support a lot of the things that we've done in the past. And so really good company. It's great to know that you're working with them. I think you're also you're sold in the Butcher's Market as well. They've been a sponsor, yep, of our show in the past, and great people over there. And I know that their businesses is like, it's going nuts right now because everyone's ordering online. It's like, it's a new model. So does that change as far as like your staff? I know that you're a small team. I mean, you're not a huge staff, but did you, right, have to have any layoffs or anybody let go, or have you increased, you know, with your staffing, or is that remain the same?
We did happen to hire somebody new that we were already planning on hiring. We originally hired with intent to be at the farmer's market, but now they have just come full time to work here instead because we opted out of the farmer's market to protect everybody. We haven't had experience yet really with the farmer's market, so we just decided to skip it for this year due to the virus. But we've been able to keep everybody on. We've totally changed the way we deliver for everyone's safety. A lot of the places we deliver to have also changed their receiving policies. So some of our delivery interactions have changed. We spend less time interacting with the people we sell to just to be contactless. Yeah. But other than that, everything has stayed the same here. We've been able to keep everybody on and busy as ever.
Max, I think you were talking about CSAs and why people sometimes are averse to them. And I think a lot of the reasons are people get a bounty of produce and some they don't know how to use, or they get one of too much things. And it's like, oh, what do I do with all this kale, for example?
Yeah.
One of the things I like that you guys have a lot of videos about all on your website about all the things you can do with lettuce and how you can really work it into sort of every meal. So I don't know if you wanted to touch on that for a second.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's like, you know, when we've gone to demos and stuff, you're like, do you want to try a sample of our baby greens? And people are like, nah. So it is hard to get people excited about baby
greens. I'm going to take the Kobe beef slider next door.
Yeah, exactly. Well, sometimes you'll have the dressings out front and people will be like, ooh, what dressings are these? And I'm like, oh, well, they're just random. I'm here to sample the salad. And they're like, ooh, the salad. So sometimes it is hard to get people excited about it. But you know, kale can go in your smoothies. You can get really creative to sneak those greens in there. We've already talked about how not a lot of people actually like kale, but you're supposed to eat healthy food. So that's easy to sneak into smoothies. It's really easy to put lettuce and baby greens on sandwiches or tacos or salads for lunch. Our favorite thing to do with arugula is to put it on pizza.
Yeah.
And then
get your greens on your pizza.
Yeah, our really good friend Lily, who comes up with some of our recipes and posts them on Instagram, she has two little girls, and she actually made kale popsicles. So she snuck some kale into some blueberry popsicles and strawberry popsicles that she made for her daughters. So you can also get really creative for how to get your kids into it. So, I mean, our website is full of ideas. We also have, and our Instagram, we also have a Pinterest that I'm trying to add to as well for some more ideas, but you really can get it in every meal.
Why is it just that you're growing lettuce, and are there experiments to grow other things?
Yeah, we would. So we grow at high density hydroponically. And so we are not set up to grow other plants that people grow hydroponically, like tomatoes and zucchini and peppers and stuff like that. We're not trying to get into that ever that I know of. That's not on the horizon. But anything else that grows like a lettuce or an herb, there's anything is open game on that.
Is that because there's you literally have to have different settings in the greenhouse to grow things?
And a lot of those plants that I already mentioned, like the tomatoes and peppers, those are actually grown in pots that the hydroponic solution flows through and is collected. And flows through individual pots, but ours is like a giant pond that everything floats on top. So we don't have the setup to grow anything that can't float.
Okay. And those things, so when you're growing different types of lettuces, Max alluded to wine, you know, like in some grapes grow great on one part or one slope of the vineyard, and some grapes grow better on the lower part of the vineyard, et cetera, et cetera. Is that the same with lettuce? Does it grow differently in parts of your, are parts of your greenhouse set up to grow different varieties of lettuce?
So we do have the ability to maintain two different environments. We can maintain water chemistries separately in these ponds. We haven't grown anything yet that has dramatically different needs, but we can adjust the temperature. You know, spinach likes much cooler water. So we happen to have one bed because our one chiller is working a little bit better than the other. So one bed is 2 degrees cooler. The spinach is on that bed. And we have different lighting. So a few of our bulbs are out on one bed. So we strategically put plants that need less light under those bulbs. But that's just because we haven't replaced them yet. And there's nothing that's a challenge to control. We haven't gotten into stuff that has very different needs, but we do have the capability once we get to that point to give them different environments.
Very cool. Back to the COVID-19 situation for a second. I know you guys took a very exaggerated, let's say, steps to make sure that everything was tip-top and very clean and healthy. And I know you guys were on top of the CDC recommendations. And what you put on your website was that there was nothing from packaging in food that could basically be a container of the virus. Is that still true? And is basically, is food packaging safe from carrying the virus?
I, whatever day that blog post was published was with the most up-to-date information. So I know that we deliver it to the grocery stores. Now, we used to use reusable containers, right, that we would collect that because, you know, sustainability is our big important factor. And we have switched to disposable cardboard boxes. We handle everything with gloves here, everything that we touch. So the only thing that is touched by our hands is the cardboard box when it's handed off. So we feel confident that we have set up everybody for safety by protecting what's in that box. And then I do know that everywhere that we're selling to has all these policies in place too, to keep everybody safe. I think I know that when I go to the grocery store, I also wear gloves and a mask like everyone is recommending right now. So I feel confident that we're doing everything we possibly can in our control. But in case the CDC has changed what they recommended since we posted that, everything is changing every day. So I'm hoping that's still the most up-to-date information.
Right. So we don't know if I were to handle some lettuce or something and give it to somebody else, if that could actually spread the virus.
Yeah. So the food that we touch, everything is also gloved, but I do know that the latest thing that they've said is that they don't think it's spread through food. But I think you have to be careful if like a bunch of people are touching stuff at the grocery store, that clamshell may have been previously touched by somebody else.
Hyper paranoid the other day while I was at Wegmans. I'm getting some food, and like I picked up a loaf of bread and I had it in my hands. I was like, okay. And then I looked over and I saw another loaf of bread, another brand that I like more. And I was like, oh wait, I want that instead. So I put back the first one and picked up that one. And I thought, everyone's watching what I'm doing. They're like, how dare that guy touch that bread and then put it down. But I was like, no, you guys have my brand. So I had to go get it and put it back. It is a little weird though. I will say, going to the supermarket after watching every episode of Handmaid's Tale, I feel like since there are a significant amount of times that they're at the grocery store and there's like armed guards and everyone's like freaked out, I'm like, this feels very much like that. In some bizarre way, but anyhow, yeah, it, at least it's not being transferred through food, which is one saving grace throughout all of this.
Yeah.
And hopefully we're getting out of Gilead soon. Hey, I do have a question, Mary. also, so you guys are very proud of the fact of your sustainability, which is awesome. I do want to know though, technically, you could never be organic. Is that right? I mean, I know you don't use pesticides and herbicides and stuff like that, but the very definition of organic is kind of contrary to this, right?
Well, so you can be organic and be hydroponic. And okay. there's a multi-part answer here. So when we were designing the business, it was under discussion whether hydroponics could ever be organic. So, and there are lots of different categories of hydroponics. So we designed our business to be a type of product that we are proud to grow and we would be happy to consume. And so we went for pesticide free. What some people don't realize is that organic food can use pesticides. They just have to use organic certified pesticides as the majority of the pesticides that they use. So we consider our product cleaner than organic in most cases. You have to look at individual farms and decisions that they make. Some people grow organic and pesticide-free, but if they're just organic, you don't necessarily know if they use pesticides. So we consider ourselves even more intense than organic and like a cleaner product. And when we got our business started and started construction, they ruled that hydroponics could be organic, but not all types of hydroponics. So there's something called aeroponics that grows using a mist. And so I do know that that was one of the only types of hydroponics that was not allowed to be organic. And this may have been updated since this was like 2 years ago when we finished construction. So we opted out of organic because we feel like we're growing better than organic.
And that's my frustration with the word organic, because it's a marketing term now more than an actual definition of something. You know, like if you look at the word organic, it means like non-manipulated, right? So the very thought of, and this is not a statement on the quality of your produce, but like you're putting you're creating an environment. So that is the opposite of organic technically. But if we maybe focus on a word like hyper-responsible, or like we are focusing more on sustainable, but somehow sustainable doesn't carry the same amount of weight as organic, although it should. But yes, some people that don't necessarily have a organic certification are actually doing things and farming more responsibly and in higher quality environments. So it's like the whole idea of organics has just gotten haywire. And I feel like we need to redefine this for the entire global, for the entire world.
Or yes, just, I completely agree.
Yeah, or just sure. Don't just devalue the word organic and don't worry about it, because that's the way it works in the wine world, and that's the way it works in so many other words. The classification has so many weird stringent laws that the uninformed seemingly figure that that is going to be the best type of fruit, vegetable, wine, whatever you purchase that you can get. But the truth is that's not necessarily the fact. There are many people that are doing things outside of organic that are more healthy, cleaner, and better for you. So just do a little more research on the brands that you purchase and understand it on there, and just don't rely on the simple fact that organic is a catch-all for all, you know, positive and best grown products.
Yeah, and what also people don't realize about organic is that often it's using, you know, it uses natural ingredients. So some of it is actually like detrimental to the planet to be mined, or it actually comes from different parts of the animal industry to make these organic ingredients. And as a small farm, it's very expensive to get certified organic. And so for some small farms, it's actually just outside of what they can pay for to be doing. So if it is something that you care about as a consumer, I recommend you look into what you do care about, because like you guys said, there's probably a lot more farms that are doing things you'd be happier about than just places that stamp organic.
Yeah, but that's the thing is I know the average consumer, and there might be a couple of people that will do it, but the average consumer is not going to go do research before they go shopping. So that's what I'm saying. as people who are in this world of the culinary world and the farming and the agriculture world, I think we need to redefine the term or specify the things, because organic has become a moneymaker for the bodies that certify you. And, just as another example of what you're talking about in the wine world, if you're organic, let's say in Europe, so that means you, to protect your plants in times of need, you can spray with copper sulfate. Well, copper sulfate is a heavy metal that sits on your vines, and we don't know the impacts of that either, but yet you're allowed to do it. And, so it's just, that's why I say, and I don't know how we can start this. In fact, maybe we need to do a spinoff podcast, Max, about the definition of organics. But it's just a funny thing, that's the pessimist in me, that the average consumer is never going to do that much research before they go shopping for their goods. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but but fear not. If you buy something that says organic, you're going to be okay. It's fine.
Yes. But sometimes you're unnecessarily paying more to buy
true.
Organic.
Yeah.
So maybe that's another way to fix the economy, is we can have more money all in our pocket if we responsibly purchase things.
Oh, that's just crazy talk. I do want to ask before we get out of here, the water that you use, is it specifically different than the water that's, say, coming out of the tap for us? You treat it a certain way? And is there anything that we as consumers should know about the water that we consume versus the water that's being used in farming versus the, like, say, bottled water or just our tap water? Any tips on that?
Yeah, so our water specifically just comes out of our well, and we did fill our ponds with thousands of gallons of water, but we recirculate it. So we actually use very little water after our initial fill. So we have it's like a pool filter that just backwashes once a day. That's really the only water that we waste at all, and it's a minimal amount just to clean our filter. Other than that, the only water we ever add is to replace what the plants absorb. So we do add nutrients to the water, but they're just absorbed by the plants, and we top off some of our nutrient levels as we add water. But our water doesn't really leave our facility at all, except for the minimal amount that gets backwashed.
Interesting. And so, so it's just your plain, pure water coming from your well. So, that's all I needed to know, I guess. So there's no fluoride in there and mind control?
No.
Chemtrails up in the air?
No, no H2 flow at all in our...
Hang on for a second. You're farming, it's hydroponic and aquaponic.
Our facility is just hydroponic. If you are doing aquaponics, it means you have some type of fish that is providing the nutrients for your water. We purchase the nutrients that we add directly.
I needed you to redefine that for me. I do have one last question. Why aren't more people doing this then? I mean, it seems like a very smart thing and a relatively, I don't know about easy, but it seems very doable.
Efficient. It's an efficient
farm going this way.
I think there's an intimidation element if you don't have experience with it. Allison and I got very comfortable with it in our master's degrees, but we still had to learn as we went. It also can be very expensive to start. So we had to put up the greenhouse. We had to put down the concrete because we have a strict plants. So we wanted concrete in the building so that no pests could come in. You have to buy the equipment to filter the water and keep the water moving constantly in the bed. There's a lot of upfront equipment costs that are well beyond just working a small amount of your backyard or some farmland that you might have in your family. So it's expensive to get started. So I think that might be the limiting factor. I'm hoping that there's like a wind of some people in my generation who are getting into farming, because I think there's a lot of, well, I shouldn't even say that, because there's modern technologies available to all generations. But you know, the average farmer is something like in their 50s or 60s right now. And so there's an element of very traditional farming I think modern farming holds a lot of answers.
Are you saying okay, boomer, to these older farmers now?
No, not at all. This is the worst part about being recorded. I feel really bad about what I started there.
Ageism is alive and well in the hydroponicking farm industry.
Oh my gosh, please edit that out.
No, but what you say is so, I mean, if when we talked with Dr. Alan Williams, who helps out Joyce Farms, and you know, his regenerative agriculture makes so much sense if you really do the research and look into it. But even he was saying how, and he's got a PhD in this, how so many traditional farmers were so reluctant to change their ways. And there is that tradition, pride, machismo, whatever it is. And just, it's hard to change sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of people, if it's not broken, don't fix it or whatever the saying is. So I think that, you know, Allison and I cared so much about sustainable farming that for the crops we wanted to grow, this made the most sense. And we were not scared of the technology and moving forward in this direction. So I'm hoping that a lot of people decide to grow more hydroponically or in greenhouses, because I think you can grow a lot more in a smaller space with less resources.
Well, that sounds great. Didn't you just have a baby?
I just had a baby.
Oh my God. Okay. We got to ask real quick. So I believe, and I saw it on your Instagram, so it's not like I'm not saying anything that isn't public knowledge, but you have a little daughter named Ursula. Is that right?
Yep. She was 10 weeks old Wednesday.
Oh my gosh. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Little Mermaid fan? Is that where that name came from?
No. You know, my husband and I are both wildlife biologists by education, and he actually really is one now, even though I have turned to farming. Ursula means little she-bear, so we're big bear people, and so she's named after some of our favorite wildlife, not the sea witch.
Oh, right, like Ursa Minor, Ursa Major. Yeah, I got
it. Yep.
So just with the quarantine, I'm curious, what has early motherhood been like for you, and like with regularly scheduled doctor visits and medicine, and just for the simple fact that being on quarantine, like, are your parents able to see the baby and all?
Yeah. So luckily she was born a little bit before all of this went down. So both grandparents' sides got to see her. And then my mom came for an extended stay to help us, because I had to go. I only had 4 weeks off, so I had to go back to work very quickly. So we had lined up a nanny, and then it didn't work out. It got put on pause because of social distancing. So fortunately, my husband's job has him working from home. So he is a working from home dad and doing the majority of the day care, which is
nice.
Which is very, I feel very lucky that his job lets him do that. So
you didn't get a nanny. You didn't get a nanny like the Tiger King's nanny at the end.
I didn't make it all the way through that show, so I'm sorry. I don't know.
No, and can that please be the last reference of that show that shall no longer be named on this?
I will tell you this much. All I will say about the Tiger King is that we finally finished watching all of this just 2 days ago, and Felicia looked at me and said, I'm so happy that that show is over and that we don't have to watch it anymore. She's like, don't get me wrong. It was fascinating, and I was curious to see like how it ended, but I want to be rid of myself watching it. Like, I'm done with it. And I totally agree with her.
I watched an episode and a half and was like, this is miserable.
And we'll take a quick pause to speak about the Folks Foundation, who are champions of all good things crafted in North Carolina and the folks that make them. Folks Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit, through ongoing grants and their publication, The Folks Journal, and their soon-to-be-released general store in historic New Bern, feature all things that highlight crafters and artisans of North Carolina, such as an artist or a farmer or a podcaster or a musician. But you can find out more and read the journal online for free at www.folksfoundation.org. And be sure to consider a small donation to help support local North Carolina makers. Folks Foundation, champions of all good things crafted in North Carolina and the folks that make them, folksfoundation.org.
During this time, while you're all at home and we all are imbibing at the nighttime or whenever time, there's no judgment, but support your local wine retailers like Triangle Wine Company, who is a great friend of our show. And they have four locations in Holly Springs, Morrisville, Cary, and out there in Southern Pines. They give you a discount if you use the NCFB promo code. And they have great selections, great customer service. They curbside pickup. They have delivery as well. They are very much set up to handle all your alcoholic beverage needs, wine-wise, that is, and beer-wise, during this pandemic, global pandemic. So support your local wine retailers and go to Triangle Wine Company. You can go to trianglewineco.com, and don't forget to use the NCFB promo code.
And you can also get their delicious ice cream that they sell, known as Proof Alcohol Ice Cream, another sponsor of our show. And Proof Alcohol Ice Cream, think differently about dessert. Think differently about how you consume your dessert. You might as well throw a little bit of alcohol in there and make it a fun time, because time is money. You got to get out there in those hydroponic fields and grow more vegetables, especially that naughty little spinach when it's not working for you. So when time is off and you want to sit back and relax, you get a little coconut rum from Proof Alcohol Ice Cream. And you can get all of these things not only at the Triangle Wine Company, but Proof Alcohol Ice Cream has also been picked up by bigger grocers like Harris Teeter and Lowe's. So if you are not in the Triangle area and can't get it from Triangle Wine Company, you can definitely go to your local Harris Teeter or Lowe's. Go to the beer and wine section and you will see a little branded red freezer that's filled to the brim, unless they've sold out, because everybody loves their alcohol and their ice cream together. So go to proofalcoholicecream.com, click the show notes for any of our sponsors. And when you do buy something from them, tag us and let us know that you're consuming something because you heard it here on the NCFMB podcast. Lastly, one more promo thing is I want to just mention that we do have these amazing hats that Matt and I, if you were on our Zoom call, and Mary knows because she can see our handsome faces with our cool hats on. Mary, we'll have to send you a hat when all this is said and done. But we have brand new North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast hats that came in, and we are now donating the proceeds of the sale of our hats to the North Carolina Restaurant Workers Relief Fund, and trying to put some money back in our bartenders, our servers, our line cooks, or even our managers' pockets. Whatever we can do to help out, buy a hat, go to our website, ncfbpodcast.com, and you can buy a hat. We'll mail it to you. Buy it for somebody that you know listens to the show and is in the industry, and it can help them out, because they will look better while they're feeling better. So thank you.
Yeah, it's a win-win. You spend $30, you get a hat, and you donated to the Restaurant Workers Relief Fund. So boom, boom.
So before we get out of here, Mary, where can we get Blue Thumb Farms?
Sure. So all of our locations are actually listed on our website. We are in King's, Bodega, all the butcher's markets. We're in 13 Harris Teeters in the Triangle area. And then we're in several home delivery produce programs like Produce Box and Hungry Harvest.
That's awesome.
Hey, Mary, thank you so much for joining us. Everybody out there, when you are in hunger of some greens and a salad, look for Blue Thumb Farms, and you will eat and drink very merrily.
Thank you so much. This was so much fun. It was nice talking to you guys.
Thanks for listening to the NCFNB podcast. And if you've stuck with us this long, review us on iTunes, and remember, 5 stars are encouraged.